Tango Tango Papa 1950, February 21st, 2016.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Holladay, Tennessee. And that's spelled H-O-L-L-A-D-A-Y, I think, as in sort of like Doc Holladay type spelling. As a, I don't know what the etymology of the town name is, but I'm sure there's some story behind it. It's probably named after somebody. It might be. I doubt if it's named after Doc Holliday, but it's named after somebody named Holliday anyway, maybe one of his relatives, who knows. It's sort of in between Memphis and Nashville along Interstate 40. Maybe a little bit closer to Nashville than it is to Memphis. So it's exit 126. So anyway, after spending the night there last night at White Pine, Tennessee, which is east of Knoxville, this morning, I don't know, it was upwards of, let's say, 10:30, 11 o'clock, they finally sent a load that somebody dropped in. They were going to drop it. They hadn't done it yet, but they dropped it in the, we have a yard that we drop things in Nashville. A bunch of other trucking companies do as well. It's just a business that kind of deals with all kinds of trailers, and they have container trailers. I think it's actually a maybe even a trucking company, but it's a commercial warehousing type thing. And so they have this gigantic lot, and so our trailers are parked in there along with a bunch of other other company trailers. And so by the time I got there, they had already dispatched the load, and the guy had already made it there. And so I made it there, I guess it was after probably 5 o'clock this afternoon. It was after that, actually, and probably more like six, or even after six. So got there, did the drop and hook, and then that load delivers Monday morning. So this is Sunday evening, or Saturday evening right now, as today's the 20th. It's about 10 p.m. So it delivers Monday morning at 1 a.m. So a little more than 24 hours from now, because it's about, you know, it's 10 o'clock here. So we got 11, 12, 1. So then add 24 hours to that, about 27 hours from now. And then so that delivers in Memphis. And they would have probably had a different load, but I'm due home for my time off on the by the 25th. And so that is why they were looking for specific load that wouldn't send me in the wrong direction. At least this is going in the right direction. And so then they have to get me home from Memphis, and it'll be Monday the 22nd. So we get 23, 24, 25. So I'm sure they'll come up with something. And I might even get home before the 25th, which that really wouldn't matter. I think the Arkansas presidential primary is on March the 1st, which is just a few days from now. However, 15 days before the voting day, which is in this case is March the 1st, they have early voting. And so you just if I have to go back to work before the 1st, let's say they got me home a day or two early, earlier than the 25th, then I would just adjust everything forward a little bit, and then I'd have to go back to work. Well, I can just make a trip to the courthouse and do the early voting thing and not have to worry about it on the actual voting day. And that's frequently what I do. Occasionally, I'll actually be home on an election day, and I'll go to the local precinct. But in this case, if I'm home, I will. But if not, then I'll just go to do the early voting thing, and that's usually what I do anyway, because the odds of me being home on a voting day or, while it does happen, it's much more likely that I'm not going to be home on the actual day that the polls are open. So the early voting thing is really, that's really one of the better things. I know there are people that complain about early voting, but that's really one of they make it really easy, because the alternative otherwise would be you file an absentee ballot, and that the absentee ballot thing is, it's just much easier if they set up the thing 15 days in advance. They have a office in the, kind of upstairs in the courthouse, and have that all set up, and you just go in there and you give them your identification, and they give you the paperwork, and you go in this little room that's set up with some little kind of privacy cubicles, fill a thing out, fill the ballot out, and then deposit it into their, they've got these black boxes that you kind of dump your ballot into, and then you're off on your way. And so it doesn't take, it's a very easy process. So, anyway, the reason there is another podcast is because I've received more audio feedback. So, reminder, if you want more podcasts, I need interaction. I need some interaction. If I have interaction, it becomes a whole lot, that really does incentivize me to record podcasts, as opposed to me just kind of talking into the microphone for an hour or more, and then send the thing off into the ether and no response. So I have a piece of feedback from Mike, so I'm going to go ahead and play that now. So here is Mike.
Hey Tom, it's Mike. Hope you're doing well, and thank you for replying to the recent comments that we put forward regarding people who back into parking spaces. I think you played a couple of podcasts in a row that kind of elaborated on our crazy habits as human beings, and I think that just is what makes your podcast so interesting, just how you touch on so many of our crazy human nature activities. But one thing that I wanted to comment back to you about was how I chuckled a little bit at your response. I kind of get it, where you had mentioned about people with pickups and SUVs possibly needing to back into spots. But the reason I laughed as I heard that is because I actually have the largest vehicle in our parking lot. I have a big 2002 Suburban four-wheel drive truck, and I'm always one to pull forward into our spot, and every once in a while, if I just happen to miss, I just kind of back up and adjust by a few inches and pull forward into the spot. But we do have a lot of employees there that probably 50-60% that I feel like they need to back in. And, what you had mentioned about needing an escape route, that may actually be exactly what it is. And I had never really figured that out before. But I think you're right, because, as a manager for our company, I don't work regular hours. And, you know, my wife and I, we come in early and we often leave much later than the other employees. And we have a view to the parking lot. And it seems like around 5 o'clock or, you know, 1 or 2 minutes after, we see a lot of folks just rushing out to their cars and leaving, almost as if they're escaping. And we normally don't say it to each other, but we all kind of look at each other and kind of snicker a little bit. It's just almost like, you know, feeling like we're back in high school where, you know, it's 5 minutes till 3 o'clock and we're already closing our books, putting our pencils away, and we're just like, you know, waiting for that bell to ring so we can dart out to our cars and get home or get to our jobs or whatever else we had to do after high school. So that's probably what the employees in the office park are doing. They're just, they're already planning when they get there in the morning to how fast they can leave when they get off their shift. And yeah, I think it's kind of comical, but at the same time, I think it's kind of sad because it just tells me that those folks don't really love what they're doing. And really, if they don't, they shouldn't be spending so many years working at our company. I recently read an article about Amazon and the CEO of Amazon, Jeff Bezos, however you pronounce his last name. He offers $5,000 to any employee who just doesn't want to work there anymore. They're not thrilled. They're not excited about the opportunities and the adventure that they're on. So he would rather fill those spots with people who are excited about being there. So it almost makes me wonder in a small way if we should do that within our company, you know, because if folks are, you know, darting out the door at 5 o'clock, it just tells me that, you know, they've probably finished up their work, you know, probably 30 minutes to an hour beforehand, and they've just been waiting for that bell to ring. And they're parking backwards so they can escape. That's no way to live. I mean, do you really want to spend your, you know, your lifetime working in a position where you're just so anxious to get out of work that you're already thinking about it by the time you get there, that you're parking just to save yourself a couple of seconds? It's just funny to think about. Anyway, but I appreciate you addressing it, Tom, and thanks for all you're doing out there. We all really appreciate it, and I know it's a tough job, just running up and down those interstates and keeping it between the lines and doing all that you do to make sure that we have the goods that we need. So a lot of us four-wheelers don't completely appreciate what you guys go through out there. So thank you so much, and look forward to future podcasts. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mike. The thing with the you know, people backing into the parking spot, you know, and making, you know, the quick escape, they're probably not even thinking about that. Some of them, I'm sure, they probably think, well, it's easier. I can just, you know, because like in a truck stop. You know, like I say, most trucks, you know, you go in a truck stop, big trucks, most of those are, you know, you're going to the trouble of backing into the parking spot because it is easier to leave. And so there's this, I don't know where it comes from, but there's this idea that, and it's really kind of unspoken, and I think everybody just sort of does it because everybody else does. Sometimes people will pull into parking spots, but sometimes it's easy to do that. But for the most part, people back into the parking spots, and it's just, but it makes it a lot easier to leave. And in that way, I guess you're just kind of, why put off till tomorrow what you can do now type of thing. But it's possible that a lot of those people, you know, like in a, you know, you're talking about an office park, a lot of those people probably, really, they're not even thinking about that, or, you know, consciously. Because some of these behaviors, it's just sort of unconscious, and we get a feeling, or you know, that we should do something a certain way, and we just do it that way, you know. And then sometimes people develop habits that they're going to do whatever it is a certain way, and then that tends to be the way they do it. So, but I think there is a there really is, and I felt it myself, you know, back when, especially, you know, the times where I've worked in an office, and it's been really two different times. The first time really was, it would have been back in the 1990s, and I was working in this trucking company. They had a driver relations department. And I was with several other people in this department. There were, there were at least three other people in the department. And, me and these two others, you know, and then you had the guy that was kind of the head of it, and he had his own little office. But me and these two others, you know, our jobs were pretty much identical. We were on the phone, so we had a phone, and we had this computer terminal. Each one of us had a computer terminal. Of course, the computer terminal was just ridiculously slow. This would have been sort of 96, 97, somewhere in that time frame. But anyway, every phone call was a problem. You know, it was a problem to be solved. And, you know, the phones would just ring off the hook a lot of the time. And so it was just constantly, you know, there were people waiting in line, you know, queued up on the phone lines. And so, and each one of us, you know, we'd answer the phone, and then, you know, so it could go, the queue could go to any one of us. So once we get off the phone and hung the thing up, it would immediately start ringing. If there were a bunch of people queued up. And so anyway, and then the other thing that we had to do, we had to, the payroll department, back in those days, all of the payroll was, or the paperwork, drivers would actually send in their paperwork and, in the mail. And, you know, and then later they got to where they had these, overnight services that they were using. Of course, nowadays everything's just scanned electronically, and you know, I do that. You can do it from truck stops, TransFlow, but they have apps, and so I just do it from my smartphone. They've got apps for Android and iOS, and just do it right from the phone, and it's, you know, transmits it right through the phone, and company has it immediately, and I keep the paperwork I keep it around, and then eventually I throw it away. But in any case, that was a fairly high stress job, phone ringing all the time, interruption, and I don't like being interrupted, so I really did experience. Now I don't remember if I backed into the parking spot at that point. Actually, I don't believe I did. I believe I pulled in, but I definitely felt the urge to get the hell out of there at 5 o'clock. Whenever, you know, no point in hanging around after that. So I stuck with that job for about 2 years, year and a half, 2 years, and I decided it was just too stressful. I'm not cut out for that kind of a job, and so I went back to driving a truck, and it was kind of like, like a vacation in a huge sense. It really was. So then the other time that I've, spent a couple of years working in an eye clinic as a computer network administrator, and that was, that would have been starting in 2000, and then 2002 or 2003, I quit there and I went back to driving a truck, because I decided that was too stressful. And it wasn't, some people can understand, but it wasn't the computers didn't bother me at all. I enjoy computers. I enjoy technology. That wasn't the problem. The problem was the office politics. I do not like office politics. I despise office politics. And I would spend as much of my time as possible upstairs. I had this little cubicle upstairs, and I would spend as much of my time as possible up there, or I was always volunteering if they needed office supplies or they needed this or needed that. I was the one that was going to get it. And what I have tried to avoid was spending time downstairs. You know, there were about, 20 or 30, I don't remember exactly how many employees there were, but there were mostly women. And in a lot of cases, they were really at each other's throats. And I tried to avoid that. Felt like I was being drained. And I knew that, kind of gut feeling told me that get out of there. You know, if there were two problems with that job. First of all, if I would have stayed with it, quickly, I would have been, if I would have wanted to go back to driving a truck, I would have had to start over going to truck driving school, basically at the bottom and start over. And didn't want to really do that. I wanted to be able to just, if I wanted to go back to trucking, I wanted to go back to it without having to go through that kind of a problem. And as it was, I waited, almost too long, and then, but I was able to go back without having to go back through school or anything. But, so that was one of the problems. But, the thing was that I really felt that if I stuck with that, that I was going to end up with health problems. And I really do believe that if I would have continued with that, I would have ended up with probably high cholesterol and high blood pressure and maybe type 2 diabetes and God knows whatever else. And I could see the handwriting on the wall. So as I say, some people cannot understand, well, you had this good job and you were making, $50,000 a year and it was an easy job, and how could you just turn your back on it and go back to doing something as hard and as awful as driving a truck over the road? And they just can't understand that this kind of a job, and it's probably just because of me, most of the time I don't look at this as work. Now there are plenty of people that are out here driving a truck that just think this job is just horrible, and I don't know how they got into truck driving over the road, but they just decide that it's awful and they can't stand it anymore and they want to get out of it and they don't like being gone away from home and the company's screwing them over, blah 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 blah. And but I find that most of the time it's not even, I don't even find it really stressful. The most stressful part is having to drive in like snowy weather or something, on bad roads, which occasionally I have to do that briefly. If it gets too bad, I stop. And in any case, but when I was working at that eye clinic, same kind of thing. Now, I don't think I backed into the parking spot, because typically I had to kind of park out, I parked out in the middle of the parking lot, you had the typical thing where there were lines of vehicles, and then up along the curb, basically that was where all the handicap parking was, because this was an eye clinic and it had a lot of handicap parking spots up by the front door along the curb. And then they encouraged the employees to kind of park in the back. And so but typically I didn't back in. I would just drive into the, and it was a big enough parking lot, it really didn't matter. It wasn't really, didn't have a really cramped feel, but nonetheless, typically unless I had some kind of a problem, I would, you know, kind of leave at 5 o'clock. But there were times where I had, you know, a few times where, the, you know, somebody'd click on a thing in an email and, you know, they'd end up with a virus on their computer. And then, you know, of course, then that would, you know, do the dreaded thing of spreading through the network. And then, you know, there were about 30, I don't know, roughly 30 computers that were running Windows. This was back, you know, Windows 95, they had a bunch of them were Windows 95 computers, and they had some Windows 98 computers, and, you know, this was kind of pre-XP, at least what they had there, and those computers would kind of get the viruses on them, and, you know, and there, so there were a couple, three times where I spent the whole night there kind of cleaning those computers up, getting them at least into a state where they could work with them the next day, even though some of them still had, you know, still had some problems. They were still functional, or I'd get them back to a functional state. So, but you know, I feel, you know, I know what that is to want to leave at 5 o'clock, but you know, and it's not something, I don't know, people might be conscious of it. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't, but. The problem that I had, like with that eye clinic job especially, and again, I don't know how good of a job I'm doing describing it, but I felt that it really wasn't the computers. That was, you know, I've always found computers interesting, the technology, and it's always come very easy for me for whatever reason. But I found it, because of the, you know, the people there, I found the whole thing kind of emotionally draining. And some of that may have been my fault, because I, you know, I've had this tendency over the years to kind of be a people pleaser. And so what I would do, I was kind of under, and I wasn't really aware of at the time what I was doing, but what, you know, I recognize it after the fact. I would actually go out of my way to sort of solicit computer problems, you know, find out what problems you're having with your computer. I would kind of go out of my way to get people to tell me their computer problems, and then I would just kind of work my fingers to the bone trying to solve those problems. And in the back of my mind, I was kind of secretly resenting it, you know. So it, you know, it's kind of then, and that's sort of a typical people-pleasing behavior. You know, sort of offer something. People do this all the time. There's a myriad of ways that people do this behavior that I'm about to describe. They sort of offer something, offer themselves, or offer some sort of doing a favor or doing something, and maybe they do a really good job at whatever it is that they do, but they're secretly resenting the people that as they smile and they do the thing, they're secretly resenting the fact that these people are taking advantage of them. But then, of course, they solicited the people to take advantage of them. And that's a very typical behavior that people engage in. And they're not even aware of it, that they're doing it. Sometimes you can see other people do that, but it's really difficult to see it in your own, you know, see it in yourself. And so after the fact, after, you know, I quit, went back to work driving a truck, and then I finally realized what I was doing. And then I, you know, only after I really realized what I was doing and was honest with myself, then I was able to stop it. And so I don't do that anymore, because I would not only do that at work, but I would do it with friends, you know, find people that were having, you know, sometimes it could be perfect strangers. I'd overhear them talking about their computer problem, and I would sort of inject myself into their conversation and offer them advice. It was good advice, but so I don't do that anymore. Sorry, but don't do that anymore. So there's a variety of reasons why people, you know, because like in my case, I felt like I was being eaten alive, is one way to describe it. I felt like, you know, somebody had stuck a large syringe in and was kind of sucking the juice out. And so it was turned out, you know, whenever I went back to driving the truck, I, you know, it was, again, it was kind of like vacation, and haven't looked back. And so that's been since 2002, 2003 is when I did that. And now, what is it now? 2016. So, and so there are a variety of reasons why people, you know, would feel like the need to get away. But the problem with that is that they're getting away. You know, they think they're getting away. Or you'll hear people sometimes, you know, they'll say, well, we need to just get away for the weekend or whatever. Get away from what? Something's eating you. And, you know, moving from one physical location to another isn't going to solve the problem. You know, because you take it with you. See, those kind of problems aren't necessarily just that situation. You take those problems with you when you, you know, wherever you go, you've got this, it's almost like you've got this invisible ball and chain kind of weight that, you know, that you're dragging around, or a big, you know, kind of a giant sack on your back. This, you know, kind of psychologically dragging you down, and you don't realize what it is. And so that's where it becomes useful. You know, like the meditation that I talk about that's on my website. It's very useful to just sit, you know, because you can't fix these problems yourself. You know, we cannot fix ourselves. We didn't create ourselves. We cannot fix ourselves. We can make ourselves worse, but we cannot fix our own problems. We can, at best, we can swap one problem for another. Or, you know, you join some group, and then the group kind of gets you to, you know, lose weight or whatever. You join Weight Watchers. Well, then you become, you know, you're just joining a cult, you know, because then they're sort of reprogramming your behavior. And you take the cult away, and you fall out of the cult, and you gain all the weight back. And so it... The thing is that if you can learn, you know, that meditation, learn to be still and allow, you know, just get whatever we are as human beings. We have this point of awareness, get, you know, practice, you know, kind of staying out of your thoughts and being in the present moment. And it doesn't even, you know, overall, it doesn't even take much of that. You know, just if you start out, you know, maybe do it two or three times a day. And, you know, for 10 minutes at a time, a couple of times a day, 10 minutes will make a remarkable difference if you're really serious about doing it. And your problems can then, you know, be solved. And it's interesting because then somehow if you'd practice that right, you know, and kind of practice doing the opposite of escaping, you know, escaping into thoughts, because that's where we fundamentally, that's where we were escaped. We're kind of trapped prisoners, kind of in our own minds, you know, like a rat in a squirrel cage going around and around and around, and it goes nowhere. The same old thoughts just keep going around and around and around, and of course there's never a solution. Get out of those thoughts. And you can end up becoming aware, and that awareness is really the only thing that can offer you a real solution. So, but you know, there's a most people, I'd say a lot. There's a lot of people that are just. They're in this trap where they feel like they're kind of being eaten up, and of course they've put themselves into that situation. You know, people put, you know, they make their own problems worse. They think, well, I'll, you know, I've got this job, and so I've got a steady income or whatever, but then I'm going to buy a car or buy a house or whatever, and then you have the giant giant car payment or whatever on top of all the other payments, and you know, and you, whatever other obligations, debts and obligations you have, and you know, and then of course then they're really trapped, you know. So they were slaves before, and then, you know, then they're even more, they've enslaved themselves even more, sort of, you know, thinking that you know, the new car is going to be the distraction, you know, it's going to somehow, it's going to fix things. And of course it's just gives you just, you know, any kind of a distraction like that, you get just a, you know, a few minutes of pleasure, and then, you know, it kind of wears off, and you know, and then the car gets a scratch on it, and then you're really, really bummed. So, but it's interesting. I don't know. It's like I say, I can't help myself. I've always observed people, sort of observed their behavior, and it's easier to observe other people, but it's really important, like I say, with this meditation, you know, because that kind of puts you into a position of seeing yourself, and that, in other words, our Creator, and there is a Creator, is there waiting for us, because we're sort of given this free will. We're sort of born, you know, got the concept of being born into sin or whatever, which simply means we're born into a system where we don't have to do what's right. We're sort of born into slavery, in a sense, slavery of sin, and then we're gonna, you know, and even if, you know, even if we're born into a perfect world with perfect parents, we're, you know, the temptation is too big, and we're gonna end up screwing up anyway, doing the wrong thing, even though we know what the right thing is to do. So we're born into that system, and if we really want out, and that's kind of a mystery, if you really want to know the truth, and that's a mystery as to why some people want to know the truth and others seem to be happy kind of wallowing in the muck. If you really want to know the truth, then you keep looking until you find it. And but the thing is, it's been right under your nose all along. It's right there, and all you have to do, you can't fix yourself. But if you just stop and allow your Creator to catch up with you, allow that the reality of your Creator to catch up with you, He will fix everything. Now, it's not instant. It's not, there's no, I don't believe in the instant, you know, you're saved and what have you. I don't think it's an instant, it's not an instant process. It's more of a, you know, you've got to have commitment, and you've got to continue to, you know, you've got to want to, you know, be persistent. You've got to want, you know, be persistent with it, and, you know, practice being still. And, of course, there's, you know, there's a temptation for people to, they think, well, you know, I've meditated and it seems, and I do feel better. And then for some, then they have this mysterious reluctance to continue with it. And they think that they can, you know, just go off on their merry way. And of course, you don't want to do that. If you find that it helps you, then you should continue with it. But if you do continue with it, it will, you know, you'll see a benefit from it. So, but your Creator is there. You know, He's here right now. And I don't think people realize to what extent, you know, God is, you know, they say, well, God is omnipresent. Well, of course He is. Because if He wasn't, we wouldn't exist. Nothing would exist. What do you think causes what gives birth to matter? What causes it to continue to exist? What causes the particles to exist? What causes those particles to you know, kind of orbit the atom and so on and so forth. What causes that to continue? So our Creator is at the very root of our existence. Very, you know, in an intimate way that we can't even begin to imagine. And yet we've been given freedom of, you know, kind of freedom of will to a certain extent. Although, you know, you can argue, is there such a thing as free will or not? But we don't have to follow our instincts, you know, in the same way, you know, an animal, you pick any animal, plant or animal, they have instincts and they have to follow those instincts. Now, they can learn, you know, to a certain extent. Different animals are able to learn, but and even plants can learn to a certain extent. But on the other hand, they can't be anything other than what they are. Now, human being, you know, there's no sense of right or wrong. You know, you take your chimpanzee, and your chimpanzee has no conscience. Nothing there. It just has instincts, and it does whatever it does, and that's that. You know, and if it kills the other, you know, one chimpanzee kills the other one, did he commit murder? Of course not. It's just survival of the fittest. So, or if one animal eats the other one, did it, you know, was it cannibalization? You know, if the mother eats her babies, is it the mother animal eats her baby animals? Is that cannibalization? Well, you can, you know, human beings might call it that, but the animal doesn't. It's just it's nutrition. Survival of the fittest. We as human beings, we have this other thing. So, you know, a metaphor that's useful, you know, the sun is to the flower, you know, so you take a flower or a tree, and that flower or that tree is sort of a physical, in a sense, there's a little bit of sun, or the sun nature. The nature of the sun is in that flower, it's in that tree. Well, in the same sense, that metaphor, you can take that and apply that with God, with human beings. We can't see God, you know, we can't with our senses, but nonetheless He is there, and His nature is He's put His nature within us, but we have access, we have kind of real-time access to it, or potentially we do, but we have a choice. You know, you can create an automaton that says, I love you, I love you, I love you, and you could be like an animal. Animal has you know, it's got its programmed behavior, it's got its instincts, but intuition and that so-called still small voice is to man what instincts are to animal, but with the exception that we have a choice. We don't have to follow, though, you know, that still small voice. The only way we're going to be able to really do that, if you know, the only way you're ever really going to be able to follow that still small voice, as like it's an instinct, is if you really love that still small voice, and you're really compatible with that still small voice. As kind of directing your behavior, directing your awareness. It's more than just behavior, but directing your very awareness, consciousness. So, anyway, I was thinking about today. You think, well, who, you know, of successful people, you know, you think, well, who's success, you know, who's a successful person? And of course, nowadays, if you ask somebody like that, that question, they're going to say Steve Jobs. You know, they're going to probably use Steve Jobs as the, you know, the person to really look up to, and he was so successful, and at least in this world he was, and you know, as somebody that you're going to look up to. And so I was thinking about this. Was Steve Jobs, I'll ask this question, was Steve Jobs successful? Ultimately, was he successful? And this may be shocking. It may be upsetting, what I'm about to say, but I don't believe he was. I think Steve Jobs was actually a failure. Now, how can I say that? The man made billions of dollars. He started a company that was this worth billions and billions of dollars. How could I say that Steve Jobs was a failure? As a human being, he was a failure. Look at how he manipulated people. Did he take his billions with him when he died? I don't think so. Looked like he died a pretty unpleasant, probably painful death. And the money didn't matter. He died anyway. And he didn't, I can assure you, he didn't take the money with him. And in the meantime, how many people did he really make miserable? He was, you read the books about him, and it's really not disputed. He really manipulated people. He knew how to manipulate people. He, you know, would just say things that to people that, you know, in order to manipulate them, that... you know, anyone with any sense would never say. You know, there's certain things that you just don't say, let alone think them, but to actually say them and manipulate people deliberately. So I think Steve Jobs was actually a failure as a human being. In the grand scheme of things, Steve Jobs is a failure. And look, you know, what's the fact? I mean, how old was he? He's dead. You know, how old was he when he died? He was in his 50s. And he died, you know, he's gone. You can say, oh, but he made billions of dollars and he started a really popular company. Well, what good was that? Was that really success? How much of a plus is that in the end when you die? How big of a plus is that when you meet your creator? And I don't, you know, I don't think it, the way I look at it, he was a failure. But of course, he gained the world. You know, you gain the world, lose your soul. And he's probably a good example of someone that gained, that seemed to be gaining the whole world. He was successful for the world, but and then people still look up to him. And what good does that do him? He's dead. He's gone. Who cares if people still say his name and they're still sort of worshiping him as a, you know, sort of like Elvis Presley? Who was also a failure. So. Anyway, I was just thinking about that, and if you ask people, you know, who do you look up to? Nowadays, oh, Steve Jobs. He was, you know, did this and did that, and, you know, gave us this marvelous technology, and we can kind of lose ourselves in the technology. You know, but he was a failure. Human being, fail. Sorry. So, anyhow, I think I'm going to go ahead and bring this to a close. And remember, if you want more podcasts more frequently, I need more feedback. More feedback, please. So, anyhow, hope everyone is having a great weekend, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.